Okay, welcome everybody to the ONAP Configuration Persistence Series project proposal for R8. So we're going to be talking about the Configuration Persistence Service project during this call. And I have with me as co-presenters Tony and Toyne, and of course many of the people on the project are also on the team, or on the team are on the call as well. So we're going to be giving you a context for the CMPS, and I'll give an overview. Tony will be talking about the context. Toyne will be talking about the model-driven proof of concept. I'll be talking a little bit about the roadmap, and Bruno and I will be talking about the use cases going forward. And then we'll try to leave some time at the end for questions and answers. Okay, Tony, you want to take it away?
Yep. So if you go on to the next slide, I'm going to talk about very briefly, because it's a fairly packed agenda today. I'm going to talk about three things that caused us to decide or to pursue creating a configuration and persistency service. So the first of those is heterogeneous data sources. ONAP is multi-domain and multi-vendor. So there are a lot of boxes, a lot of different network functions, a lot of different variations of those network functions across multiple domains, radio access, transport, core, that need to be managed and orchestrated. So the second aspect then was a need for shared data access. So there was a growing need in ONAP that information that has been retrieved from one network function didn't necessarily or should not necessarily be need to be retrieved by multiple other applications in the ONAP portfolio. So we're looking to try and avoid that, and that's the second reason why we wanted the CMPS. And the third was to introduce a new model into the ONAP system, into the ONAP platform. It was quite a long and laborious and manual, a lot of manual steps and lots of people and meetings and not always warranted. And in order to address that, we're looking at how to handle models in a much more graceful way at runtime without having to impact the platform. So the solutions to these very briefly are model-driven persistence, shared data access through ownership, and again, model-driven persistence. So if we skip on down to the next slide, we go to the problem in a little bit more detail. So this is a pictorial view of the different types of network domains that we need to cater for, the different types of accesses that we have to cater for, and the different types of use cases that all are looking for the same information. So this is driving the need for one place where data from, in particular configuration data from XNFs should be available. Okay, so if we skip on down, our solution is to have what is basically a blackboard pattern. So the CPS is the teacher down at the front. It has invested the time and effort to make this information available, and all of the students or all of the applications in the ONAP context can actually make use of that information without having to relearn or without having to discover that information themselves. And if we scroll down, this is how we do model handling today in ONAP. There's a lot of bodies, as I said, and the worst part for me when I looked at this was the fact that the ONAP platform was impacted as a result of bringing in a new vendor package, which then meant that there was a complete role of the ONAP platform in order to support a new vendor package if it introduced types that weren't envisaged when the platform was written, when that version of the platform was written. So in order to streamline that, we were aiming to go to the next slide, which is a much simpler view where the vendor package is simply added by the operator and there is no platform impacts at all. So the SDC is used and then the ONAP applications can consume the vendor-specific model directly. Controllers and DMAP, of course, are always in the picture. The next slide, Ben. Yeah. Is our shared data access. So this is very much a cornerstone of permission and ownership of data. So ownership of data has to be well-defined, because otherwise we end up with huge levels of coupling in our common data service, where every service can access every other service's data. So this is a little bit of a red flag or a warning from a coupling perspective and from the longevity and maintainability of the ONAP platform. So to balance the need of the Blackboard type functionality, where applications really did need to get access to low-level data in order to be performant, we introduced in tandem with the CNPS this concept of ownership, or we are introducing this concept of ownership. So in order for service C in this picture to access data that is owned by A and B, it must first ask for permission from either service A and or service B before accessing that data. So this is quite new, but what it means is that any coupling between service C and service A is explicit and upfront and understood and therefore governable. So that doesn't stop necessarily coupling from occur, but it does make that coupling visible. Whereas if you had a free-for-all, then that coupling would be invisible. The next slide. And this finally is a picture with an example of one type of network function. So a network function that's compliant with O1 interfaces. And it is communicated with from the CPS project using the XNF proxy. So the XNF proxy is responsible for owning or owning any models for that O1 compliant entity. In the CPS project, of course, mostly what we're going to be talking about today is the CPS, the purple CPS object. And the CPS project is living inside the ONAP community. And that's me. So I'm going to pass you back to Ben, who will give you a little bit more about roadmap and
Yeah, thank you. So I'm going to be talking a little bit about the business case, the architecture, give you a slightly lower level overview of the actual project and then some technical flows. So basically CNPS is serving as a real-time service and is designed to serve as a data repository for runtime network element data, of which configuration data is largely most of it what we expect to store in it, but of course you could store other things in it as well. Any data, network element data that needs to be persistent, and it does apply to multiple domains. We went to the architecture committee quite a number of times, like 5 times, to get some advice and to discuss and the proposal and to get their recommendations of how to incorporate this project into the community. And basically, the recommendation was that it be a shared service as its own separate standalone component. So this is a conceptual view of the project. Basically, it's a persistent data layer that has its own internal database and is meant to store network element data. And microservices and use cases and can store, read, and write that and have access to that network element data, as Tony mentioned. But configuration management information or just information can also come in from XNFs through various means, like, for example, the standard defined bus event. It comes across as a CNPS update onto the DMAP bus and gets retrieved by the CNPS component and then written into the database. Of course, other platform components could access read and write information as well. And in order to make sure that the basic records in the CNPS database are aligned, it also will pull off the ANA update messages and update the appropriate records. So this is just a little bit more detail, but primarily it's here to show that the CNPS database isn't meant to replace those 35 existing databases that are being used by various platform components. Those will continue to exist. And I mean, you could if you wanted to, but that's not the purpose of that's not the original charter of CNPS. Rather, it's meant to focus on network element data and complement the databases within ONAP. So we're not trying to create some mega monster database. We're we're just basically serving as a data repository for essentially for microservices and other things that need to use it. It should also be emphasized that, as Tony mentioned as well earlier too, that this does apply across multiple domains. It's not intended to be specific to RAN or core or transport or fixed access or anything. It's any kind of thing that ONAP could manage could store network element data. Additionally, we expect to have northbound open APIs and GUIs that would allow you a person to be able to see what's in the database. And in the initial couple releases, there's a couple of use cases that are already sort of customers of the project, the model-driven POC, which Twain will talk about in a second, and the OFSON use case and the network slicing use case. We have been in touch with these teams, and they're quite well aware and have incorporated into their presentations and talks and discussions usage of the CMPS service. They want adapter extension policy coming up, and Bruno here today will be talking about the state management work happening in R7 and R8. So there are quite a number of flows. There's actually a flow wiki page, and there's more of these flow slides, and I'll only go over a few of them. But this gives you a sense of a few flows. So basically, when a PNF wants to send up a parameter update or a configuration update, it can do so through this new standard find VES event, which was defined in release 7 and developed in release 7. And of course, the main portal into ONAP is the DCA VES collector. So it takes that standard find VES event and publishes it onto a namespace topic with 3GPP provisioning, so that basically any component can pull that thing off the Kafka bus. But of course, CPS or something else that owns that would want to listen to that and can subscribe to that DMAP talk and pull that information off and update the database with it. I also mentioned that we need to sync with ANAI. So ANAI will still continue to serve as the real-time view of all of the existing and operating network elements within the system. And the CPS database, though, can not just complement ANAI, but also extend it in ways that ANAI wouldn't want to store information. For example, a good example is the cell logical object. So the CPS will have records for cells and have knowledge of cells, whereas the rest of ONAP may not need to have that knowledge. But it would also need to know information about XNFs that exist. And of course, when an update happens, ANA publishes changes in the network, and those changes would be reflected in CMPS. And then finally, of course, the microservices would need to have access to the CMPS, and we've been in discussion about a registry service and how to coordinate between microservices that need access to data. And of course, it can read and write information into the CPS database. So this is a view of a view of where we have a slightly more complex thing, where basically a controller might want also to coordinate information and send down information to an XNF, essentially updating some information on that XNF, and may also simultaneously need to update stuff in the system. This might be not necessarily a controller, it could be lots of other things. You know, you might imagine policy or control loops or things that want to update something. So not just microservices and use cases, but other things you could envision in the future may also, for some reason, may want to also update the database. So controllers can send down, for example, information down across the O1 interface, perhaps with netconf or Ansible or Chef, and make a commensurate change to the CPS database. Okay, and this slide is just showing that one of the other drivers that that we noticed early on was that, you know, people were starting to put stuff into ANAI that didn't really belong in ANAI, that wasn't really relevant to actually tracking inventory information. It's not inventory information. It's it's just other information that people are starting to put there because there was no other real place for it. And ANIA has already a deep infrastructure for managing and to serve as a database. But the problem is as we grow ONAP and come to evolve ONAP, and when ONAP really starts plugging into actual PNFs, you know, that there's going to be hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of parameters, for example, configuration parameters that really truly aren't have anything to do with inventory whatsoever. So the sort of overlap though is, you know, I have PNF number 105, 106, 107, and CPS needs to know that those elements exist so it can have records corresponding to those elements. But it can also have a lot of other, I don't show that here, but you can also have a lot of other logical records as well. I mentioned cells and other things as well could be logical elements. Okay, so Toin is gonna talk about the proof of concept here.
Yeah, thanks, Ben. If you wouldn't mind, could you hand over host to Niamh so she can present the next slide?
Yes, sure. Let's see. Okay, let me make co-host. Okay. Okay.
Thanks for that, Ben.
Yeah.
Niamh, if you're ready, take over the slides. Okay, yeah, thanks. I think this is me presenting now. So my name is Trond Siebelink. I've been working for Ericsson on the POC for the CPS. So given it's a proof of concept, what were the main points we wanted to prove in this POC? We wanted to demonstrate that we can execute read and write operations for young data fragments in CPS and store them in a generic database schema. We want to demonstrate that we're able to deploy and upgrade young models at runtime. And then we want to demonstrate that the behavior of CPS is changed by the young models that have been deployed. So we want to provide an architecture vision and a roadmap for target architecture with supported use cases and non-functional requirements towards an ONAP project. So this is a kind of a high-level view of what Ben has just been explaining in detail. The blue boxes are mainly existing components with the new component configuration persistence in the middle. And then the purple boxes are the work that we identified that needs to be done. If you move on to the next slide. So during the POC timeframe, we couldn't address all of that, of course. So during the POC we've achieved was basically left colored now. And the update scenarios are in progress, and I'll show you that soon. So we have at the moment a CPS API with those use cases in mind. We have a model-driven schema in place, and we have a database. Basically, all of that has been set up now. Now, first of all, from a community point of view, what have we been doing? Every Friday, Ben is hosting a meeting about this project in which we discuss many things. So very early on, as Ben mentioned, we had discussion with the TSC and we got approval for the POC. We've been executing the POC since then, a couple of months now. Just this week, we got approval for the actual project. So it's kind of now moving from a POC to a proper project in the R8 Honolulu timeframe. So we've created a wiki with the use case and requirements for that. We've presented CPS in many fora, like what we're doing here today, and also recently in the O-RAN Plugfest. From a resourcing point of view, I'm one of three full-time developers working in Ericsson, and Bell Canada has three part-time developers contributing to this code as well, to the POC at the moment. So we've established a Jira backlog, team ceremonies like scrums and backlog rooming. We have a developer's landing page where all these activities are visible, the agenda for that, and you can look at that if you want to join and contribute to this as well. Okay, on the Friday meetings, we established a way of working where we really have a list of open issues and decisions we need to make, like the table that you see there below. One of the very first thing we decided, and this was an important decision, is that we decided to use the Open Daylight Young Tools library because it gives us all the functionality that we need for parsing young models and young data. Now, many decisions and discussions are still ongoing. And as I said, they've been tracked in that table. There's a column there that links to pages that have a detailed analysis of the issue. And then once it's decided, at the right column will log the decision. What also been agreed and been implemented at this stage is a pretty standard layered architecture layout. So we have a REST API on top, but we also have a Java API for applications that want to basically directly use the CPS as a library. What's a bit more unique about this approach is that we're using a service provided interface, the SPI, for the connection to the database layer. Now we're also implementing the SPI, but the theory is that the SPI can be, that we can have multiple implementation of this for supporting different database technologies. So the actual status of the implementation, where are we today with the POC? The POC is being developed on a Nordics branch to avoid impacts on the actual production code because we're piggybacking on a CCSDK repo. Hopefully now we've gone to the project stage, we get our own repo soon and we can use the normal process for committing code. The project structure has been set up and completed following the ONAP standards and conventions. We're trying to achieve production code quality from the get-go. We're using ShonaCube and check styles for that. And we're also have introduced Groovy and Spock testing to make sure that all the code we delivered is of the right quality standards. As I mentioned, the ODL Young Tools parser has been integrated. We use it for parsing Young models, and we use it for parsing of Young data, either in JSON or XML format with some validation for the model that the data belongs to. So at the moment, and we're going to show you that shortly, we have the first end-to-end iteration of two use cases completed. We can upload and validate a Young model, and we can upload a JSON data object. Currently ongoing is our proposal for the REST API interface. We want to make sure that we're using the latest standards and could have a good, clear, easy to use REST interface that's following the current conventions. We also use OpenAPI 3 to publish this interface. We hope to finalize this soon and get this interface proposal approved. We have implemented a generic schema that I mentioned earlier. So the idea is that this schema can store any modeled data without having to be modified if models change. It's portable and it can easily be adapted to any database technology. To get some idea of whether this will perform, we have some early performance testing on just the database layer using inserts of kind of generic records of the kind of size that we expect that they will be inserted. We've tested this up to 2 million records and we measured the speed of 450 records per second. While this insert was going on, we also executed XPath queries, the kind of queries that we presume the application will be doing, and they're executing within less than 100 milliseconds. A more complicated query counting objects for a certain condition and walking a tree of 75,000 objects took less than 1 second. Deleting a similar size tree of 75,000 objects took a bit longer because there's a lot of built-in constraint checks that the database executes, and it took about 6 seconds to delete that amount of data. Okay, so now we're going to show you some videos of the end-to-end functionality that we've implemented. First use case is uploading of JSON data, and we'll see what happens when we pass invalid JSON as well. Then we'll do something similar for a Young model file, which contains one or more modules. And again, what happens if it's invalid. And then finally, this hasn't been fully integrated yet, but we're going to show you that in a different way. We have the code ready for splitting a JSON data object and giving them for a certain model into the fragments of the object that it really consists of. And we're going to show you what happens if the model would change. So Niamh, if you want to start showing us the first video, please.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is the demo for upload and validate a JSON object. So this is our database. We have a column for ID and for the JSON structure. So now if I head over to Postman, this is the URL we're going to be using to talk to our REST controller. Given that we're using a valid JSON object, we should get the ID returned and a HTTP response of 200. So I'm just showing you guys here the JSON file that we're going to be using for this demo. So if I select that, click send, you can see we get a message returning the ID and also a response code of 200. So now if I flip back to the database and reload it, you can see that now the structure has been saved within the database with an ID of 1. So if I try the same thing with an invalid JSON file, so I'm just going to take the file we used, remove a section to create a syntax error, and go back to Postman, click send, and now we get an error message and a response of 400. So now I'm going to show you guys the next demo, which is upload and validate a Yang model. So here is our database again. I'd also like to add for both versions of the database, it is just a dirty version of the schema. So as you can see here, we have a column for ID, module content, name, and revision. If I flip over to Postman, this is the URL we're going to be using to talk to a REST controller. So I'm just going to show you guys now the Yang model we're going to be using. It's just a typical Yang model that we're using for this demo. So if I select that, hit send, you can now see we get a message that says Yang file parsed and a 200 response code. So if I go back to our database, reload it, you can see the content of the Yang model is now saved in our database. So if I try the same thing with an invalid model, I'm just going to do the same thing again and remove a section of it to make it invalid. Click send, we get an error message and a 400 bad request response. Okay, thank you. I'm going to hand it back over to Tuan for his demo.
Yeah, thanks very much, Niamh. So yes, I'm going to be showing what happens if we have an existing model and data and we try to break it up in fragments. For this, we have developed a bookstore model just for testing purposes. And I'm using a Groovy test as this code hasn't been fully integrated for the end-to-end use cases yet. So if I zoom in on the Yang model for the bookstore, we can see we have one module, a namespace and a revision, etc. It has a container called bookstore with a name attribute, a list of categories, and each category has a list of books, and every book has a few attributes. Now here's some data for that bookstore model. So again, we have a bookstore, we have a category of sci-fi books with a few books in it, and we have a category of kids books. So now I'm gonna switch over to my Groovy test. I'll just show you quickly how the Groovy test works. We load the bookstore Yang model, and that gets converted into a schema context from which we then extract the module of the book for the bookstore itself. Then we provide it with the bookstore JSON data that gets converted in what's called a normalized mode collection. And then we use the new code to fragment that and make it ready for our database storage. There's some search there, but I'm gonna run this test in debug mode now to show you in more detail what happens. So when we pass the data, we get a root fragment. There's the bookstore with its name. It has two children, one for each list. And then the first list contains two books again. And again, I can keep expanding that and you see the attributes there.
So just to give some context, essentially you're demonstrating a Yang model being loaded and setting up the CPS database.
Correct. So it's just showing how that gets broken down and ready to be stored in the database. Now in the second demo, I'm gonna modify the model. So I'm gonna change the attribute that we had for the bookstore from a name into an address. And then I'm deliberately not changing in this first demo, I'm not changing the data. And I'm gonna try to run my test again. Now in this case, might be a bit small to see, but with all the red, it's clear. There's an exception there and it's telling me that the bookstore name, which is still in my data, is actually not in the model. So it's not accepting this as valid data at the moment. So now I'm gonna change my data to also accept, or change it to address, as it's now defined in the model. Put in a dummy address, although the actual data validation is not really checking this. I'm going to go back to my test. Just run the test itself just to see that it passes first. And you can see there, everything is green. Now I'm going to run it one more time quickly in debug mode just to show you what has changed. So the data now has automatically been adapted, and now the root fragment has an attribute called bookstore address with the right data in it. And that concludes these demos. Just want to give you a quick summary of what we've achieved in the POC. Thank you. So basically we have the seed code going forward to a full project. We have achieved on the four proof points. We have architecture agreement and implementation in place. As you've just seen, we can demonstrate the core functionality of end-to-end for some basic use cases and the integration of the young parser. And we have some indication of the performance that the system should be able to handle. So I'm handing over back to Ben.
Are there any questions about any of the demo things that we've seen for Toyn? We're a little bit ahead of schedule, so. Okay, if not, let me share. Can you see my screen?
Yep.
All right, let me jump ahead here. All right, gonna talk next about where we are, where we've been, where we're going. So this project kind of started out as something called ConfigDB in the CC SDK, SDNC, where it currently resides. And we needed to have some terminology amongst the team and other teams that we were working with. So we've called that CPS 1.0. And it really starts before R6, really. So this database, internal database, was originally used by the SAN-OF PCI team, now called the SAN-OF use case team. And in R6, it basically has some rudimentary parameters that it needs specifically for that use case, and is based on a MariaDB solution. So in R7, we presented to the TSC a couple of times to describe the project, to describe our project proposal, and after we had gone to the architecture subcommittee and drafted a flow diagrams and the component description and worked on the project proposal for some number of months, we went to the TSC to basically ask to be an independent project. There were some questions that were raised, and we decided instead to pursue a POC to sort of lay some of the groundwork software in place. But the need for CPS is still there and still strong in R7 and continuing onwards as well. Notably, the end-to-end network slicing needed some kind of solution as well. And so the OF SAN team had agreed to basically evolve the CC SDK and SDNC work in order to accommodate that other use case temporarily in R7. And we've also been working with the CC SDK project and SDNC project and Dan Timoney, et cetera. So that we're calling CPS 1.1. And in that same time, we've been working to develop the architecture and this model-driven POC, which will lay the foundation for this base CPS software, provide some rudimentary functions like read and write and access control. and simultaneously, Belcana Bruno's gonna talk next about this the state management POC, which is using CMPS is another important use of the project. And then finally, we come to Honolulu. So where we're calling CPS 2.0, and we've gone to the TSC, a couple days ago the voting closed on it. So they were all plus one. So essentially, we're a standalone project now. And it's been approved as a standalone project to be a standalone project. And of course, it remains to set up the project repo. Toyin will be the PTL, and we're finalizing the vote on that as well. and eventually we'll be able to deprecate all this other, or transition, you know, basically deprecate and transition all this previous work into this new standalone project. And then over time, of course, we want to develop more and more functionality. Once we have the basic functionality there, some early things might be data recovery and model adaptation for dynamic schemas. And of course, once we have a lot of that, the basic project repo set up and get the RST, like read the doc stuff in place and the basic software in place, other things can access it. And also we'll want to finalize on the registry model and registry software, and then introduce slowly some of the other more advanced functions such as auditing and topology traversal and syncing, data auditing, data history rollback, and database backup and performance optimization. So I'm also going to show you really quickly our project proposal. And the reason why we specifically did this, lay it out this way, is because the project proposal, following the template of a project proposal, you actually, there's actually you're basically describing the entire proposal in its sort of full glory, its long-term vision of everything it might do in the future, right? So which seems rather overwhelming and daunting, and we want to show that that's not what we're trying to do, but rather to sort of phase in this advanced functionality. So the project proposal, which we've been working on for, had been working on for quite a number of months, gives an overall description of the project. Some of those things you've already seen, what the sort of the, some of the key functions are to read, write, and publish information. We went to the architecture subcommittee and got their recommendation as well. And that's where we were first working on the flows. So in this page, you'll see some of the basic flows and the component descriptions that all the PTLs have to come up with. And then this project proposal. And then we spent quite some time discussing some of the basic concepts and principles of what this project will do, setting up a database schema, receiving, reading, and writing, and publishing updates, synchronizing information with ANI, for example, concepts of scalability and performance. So some of the performance numbers, of course, still are open points, but as we learn more, we can fill in some of that data. And that's really the only kind of open point in this whole proposal. Database, more advanced database management functions and things related to data integrity and recovery, backup and export restoration and rollback, and then consumer API. A section about dependencies and what we depend upon. So lots of things may depend upon us, but we really only need a few things in AAF, there is some internal database, and then of course the ability to load Yang models. And then these are our table of committers and so forth. And then the presentation and recording we made at the TSC, and the slides we presented at the TSC, these presentations here you're seeing, and our presentation into R8 we've made to the architecture sub, requirements subcommittee, and this specific roadmap that I'm walking you through now, and then some table of our project pages over the various releases, where from here you can get to many of our other things. I guess I should copy this into the chat really quick. Okay, so, and then there's also the ONAP project component lifecycle, where when you propose a project, there's this stage of next steps during incubation. And these are some of the next steps basically that we're walking through to make sure that we have all our I's dotted and T's crossed. Okay. Any questions on any of that? Okay, good. And so I'm going to turn it over to Bruno here to talk about the state management POC. Bruno, are you there? Bruno, are you there? Hello? Not unmuted. Can people hear me?
Hello? Can you hear me?
Hi. Okay.
Sorry.
Maybe you're on
mute or thanks, Ben. Double muted. That's the reason why. We're going to share with you where we are at Bell and where this the State DB initiative started. So it started with the observation that in ONAP we already have several stores and data stores, like inventory we already talked about for. With AI for the inventory and the topology. We have another data store for services and resource with SDC, and also on the intent side, we already have SDNC and CDS for the network intent. But what maybe we were missing is more the network operational data could be, the actual configuration of the network element, or it could be also the state of the network element, the state of the services, how the network is currently behaving. Is it overloaded? Some elements are they up, down? So keeping track of the operational data and also the evolution of this operational data over time, that's where the missing part, and where that's where we start looking and working on the state database to fill this gap. And we can go to the next slide to see where we see and where we are putting the state database in our control loop flow where we see it. So really the state database is mean also to work, let's say, with and to come to support analytic application. Coming from the collectors to the analytic is able to receive the operational information. And basically, instead of also having each analytic to retrieve the same information, and so there is a purpose to be able to keep track and to leverage this information at the common level, and then all the analytic application will be able to do their analysis correlation based on this data, and the data could be analyzed over a period of time to see how maybe to detect the trend and to be able to pinpoint any unexpected state or unexpected actual configuration of the network, and if ever such a case is detected, then the analytic application can raise an event to policy framework component, and policy framework component will be able to take a specific action to request for a specific action to the actor to make the remediation on the network. So in the loop, that's where we are seeing CDB is coming to support and leverage control loop, and especially the analytics application. So we start with MVP for that, and so we can go to next slide. So the MVP is currently implemented some basic feature of this state database. So we are providing some endpoints to be able to store state and be able to retrieve them for our use case, and the state itself are really also a JSON payload that is compliant to a young model. So that's the objective for now. all the model validation is not in place, but the key point is really to come with a fully generic and generic model that can support any type of data. It could be state configuration, as long as it follows Young model. So that's what we have currently. And for the next step, we saw that both StateDB and CPS have the same high level vision to implement the missing runtime operational store and to support the other ONAP component, and also the common point is that both of them are leveraging Young model to come with this generic structure for the data. So that's why it makes sense, and the vision we have is really to have both of them converging and coming with one component to fulfill this requirement. So yeah, that's our vision. That's what we are working on, and that's it. I don't know if you have any questions.
Anybody have any questions for Bruno? So essentially, Bruno, I mean, the mm-hmm. idea is that you provide additional functionality using CPS to be able to keep track of state type information that all service writers could find useful for to track network elements or to state type information, right, in using the infrastructure of CPS.
The way I would say from a feature point of view, it's because CPS provide a completely generic, and it's not specific to a given, or is not dedicated to a specific model. So we would like to work on these capabilities to be able to have in CPS both configuration or state information, because as soon as both of them are following the Young model or are following the open config model, they could fit in it and could be kept track into CPS. So that's where we can see that both are really converging.
Great.
Could be both state and configuration can fit here. Yeah.
Okay, thanks. So we'll move on to other use cases that are going to be using CPS as well. We talked about the state management POC, and I'll talk briefly about OFSON, network slicing, and the A1 adapter, not immediately actually, so I might skip that. So the OFSON PCI use case, basically the idea here is that there are 1,008 PCI values that you can distribute within a 5G network, 508 in a 4G network. And of course, you don't want adjacent cells to have similar values, and you don't want two cells to have the same value. So it's a graph coloring problem. But it's also basically a closed loop where the elements, in this case simulated, are sending their PCI values, and you want to be able to store those PCI values as well as the cells that you want to keep track of, and the neighbor relations, neighbor lists as well in this database. And then through policy, you can update values as you need to. So this is a view of some of the parameters that they're looking to manage, or that they do manage in their current solution, like network ID, their cell ID, the PCI values, the neighbor lists, timestamps, and the PNF name, and so forth. So we've been working with I attend the OFSON PCI calls every week, and they're also have been working on this use case for quite a number of releases. In this past release in Guilin, they were looking at some machine learning enhancements, and we'll be continuing on in R8 as well. Network slicing has slowly been evolving since R2 as well. It's moved from modeling work to now actual being able to do RAN core and transport and SSMF management. You see here the blue, these third-party component type stuff, they are slowly also getting in place as well. So use case 2, 3, and 5 aren't quite yet supported yet, but 1 and 4 are by Guilin. So they're able to essentially create a, actually, I'm hopefully the next slide. Oh, so there's a slide in the, if you look at the end network slicing slide package, there's also a slide that kind of describes all of the things they can do. I mean, they can manage and create and update slices already, and there's quite a bit of evolved functionality. But one thing that's important to note, I think, is that in Guilin, of course, there are a lot of standards-driven parameters that they need to use. These are coming from 3GPP TS28.540 and 541, which is the 5G NRM part 1, 2, and 3. 540 is part 1 and 541 is part 2 and 3. And so you see here, there's a lot of objects, and these are all objects and then parameters within that object. And these are all the sorts of things that you'd want to store in CPS, which they're temporarily storing in CPS 1.1's database. Okay, and I'm gonna have I think Jacqueline is on the call as well. I saw if she's still on. Maybe she dropped. Ooh. Okay. I think she dropped. But there is also some modeling work, I think is a good dimension at least as well, while we have a minute or two here before the questions. The team has also been working, and led by Jacqueline, has been working on considering how to work on the models, where basically this is a platform information model where basically we're looking to introduce a resource app model into design time, and a corresponding instance of that in runtime to model the dynamic allocation of and creation of these Yang modules. And essentially what this will allow you to do is that rather than completely overturn the existing platform information model, it allows a vendor to load in specific Yang model, Yang models without completely, having to integrate all of those things into the existing information model. So it's a little bit of a wart, but it's an interesting solution to be able to allow dynamic incorporation of different kinds of standardized and vendor specific models. And of course, it's optional. You can set it as optional or not. Based on the cardinality here. Okay, and with that, we are right on time. So we have about 5 minutes for questions. Does anybody have any questions at all on anything? It's all perfectly clear.
Does anybody want to contribute?
Yeah. Yeah, you can. So we do have calls on every Friday as well. I can point you to some of those. That's a good point too. Let me see. So Hugh, I have it up here, I think. So this is our current meeting page here, and so here we track also our calls and like for example, this is today's call and who's on it. Let me just put this in the chat as well. Okay, so this is our current meeting page. We do also have an R8 page, which is you can already get off of the link there.
And there's the design page as well that was linked in the presentation.
Right.
So if folks do want to get involved, there's plenty of actors with Tuan and with Ben's meeting on the Friday, where we just discuss the context and the higher level stuff, and then there's the nitty gritty stuff that's happening that Tuan is running, which is also quite interesting if you're into that level of contribution. And I think we're open to both.
Yeah, and the discussions page here, where we're every week we're chipping away at some of the architectural discussions. We've talked about a lot of interesting topics and try to discuss those as a group and as a team. We've looked at things like time series management, time series databases, and the management of what you know what to do with the network management models, and the registry service is very interesting as well. So while we have a minute or two, maybe I can show that. Okay, so let me just pull that up real quick. So that actually crosses over also into the 5G service modeling work that I'm working on as well, where we're trying to look at, you know, and sort of what Tony showed as well, but some with some a little bit more detail. The team has walked through and discussed how to design this register service where when you have a certain kind of data, that the service that sort of created that data owns the data. And so you want to make it so that something else can look at that data and get access to it, but they essentially have to negotiate with that other service that owns the data to ask for permission to get access to that data. And this is a series of steps where that can happen. So you know the service A registers that it has certain kinds of data, like I might have antenna data or RAN data or you know transfer data or core data or whatever. and then another service that's can basically query from this index or this dictionary, this registry service, I'm interested in antenna type of data, and it returns a list of all the services that have that kind of data. And that allows this other service to go and ask all these different services if you have antenna data and the kind of data that it's interested in, and the XNFs that have that that it's knowledgeable of. And then from that it can look for specific things. So in this example, we're looking at electromechanical tilt, for an example. It can go and ask for antenna data, and it gets from this registry service all the things that might have antenna tilt information, and then it can actually go and once it gets permission through perhaps a security token, it can go and ask for that data. Okay. So anyway, any other thoughts or questions from anybody on anything? We have like 1 minute left. Okay.
If there's no other feedback, I'd just like to say I thought it was a nice demo and a very good presentation of the work that's done so far. I thought it was very good.
Yeah, thank you, Karen. Yeah. All right, great. Then we'll wrap up this session here. Thank you everybody for attending. And like you said, if you're interested in joining or finding out more, you know, don't hesitate to contact us. All right, thank you. And enjoy the rest of the conference.
Thanks. Bye.
Thanks, Ben.
Thanks. All right.